Is this thing on? Take down that top knot, loosen that tie, close your laptop, and say goodbye to your email for the day. Let's go grab a drink and cheers. This is the Drinks After Work podcast, and I'm your host, Tiffany Callahan.
Today's episode is with Melissa Sanchez. She is a user researcher, and she's one of my best friends, and I do believe this episode gives you true insight into what a happy hour actually looks like with us. We talk about everything from wine and how we get it and what kind of flavors we like to, actual user research studies, why some user research is important for both big corporations and small businesses. We give some ideas and tips and tricks on how to do little mini research studies as a small business. We talk about shopping experiences online versus in-store or whatever. We talk about it a lot. And I know you're going to enjoy it. And then at the very end, we get into some fun games. So enjoy listening.
There may or may not be vodka in it.
Nice. I like it. I like it. Well, I need to leave at some point to go get wine because that's my problem.
Yeah. You basically need like a la carte. Like I need like the Amazon Prime wine version where it's just like you sign up for just continuously send this thing to me.
Yes. My problem is I think I know what wine I like, but I don't actually know what wine I like. And generally speaking, like when I go out with someone, I just defer to them. Like you, I know will pick a good wine regardless of what time of year it is. You know my mood. And so you're like, yeah, we're in a rosé mood or we're in a white mood or we're in red mood.
Red. Yep. I will say the good thing that has come out of my proximity to fantastic wine stores and liquor stores, I have essentially created a network of people who know what I like. And I know I can trust them. And as soon as I walk in the store, I'm like, I know that guy. I trust his taste and his palate, and he knows what I like. And I can like reference a few other things that he has either recommended to me in the past that have worked or like similar bottles or whatever. You just need to learn the buzzwords that get you what you want.
Yeah.
And then you need to just have a few people in your network that work at different stores and then just continue to go back to them.
Yeah. That's my problem. See, I used to have that with bartenders.
Yeah.
Where like, you know, my local bar over here, I'd go in and they'd be like, wine? Be like, yeah. That's actually how they knew I was pregnant. They were probably one of the first people to know that I was pregnant.
They're like, no wine? Yeah,
they're like,
for you? What? Well, once we get to see each other again, let's go to a winery or wine bar and taste a huge sample of wines and figure out what exactly your palate likes. And then we'll figure out a whole list of wines and brands and stuff that make it that way. If we need to fly to Napa to make that happen, I mean, I also won't knock that.
We might have to. All right, so let's get down to it. You are a UX researcher, and what I want to get to, especially in this particular instance, is a little bit of like the in-depth conversations and like the in-depth projects and actually being a part of the user research study. Later on, we'll get to maybe in another episode or something, I'll bring you back and we can talk about like the background and how you got to be a user researcher. But for now, I want to dive into a little bit, you know, what it's like actually being in the day-to-day and kind of dig through that kind of stuff. So you bring in the business people and the product people and whoever you can into your research studies.
Yes.
And I am a huge proponent of that because I feel like a lot of times people think one thing or they get into their mind with a solution that they think is the right solution for whatever problem they want to solve. And they don't. Like there's personas. I love personas. You know how much I love personas.
Yes.
There's personas for a reason. And IT person, you are one persona. And just because you have this problem and think that the solution for it is X, the target market for this problem is actually Debbie, the busy mom with the three kids and the crazy calendar, yep. and that is not you. So yeah. you think that the solution might be X when the solution might be Y. And I think that bringing in, like, I saw this happen one time during one of the research studies that I was lucky enough to sit in on, where I understand and am open to the fact that I don't know everything.
Yeah.
Right. And I butted heads so much with this one guy, because we were in this research study together and he was telling me over and over again, like, no, this is going to be the answer. I bet you so much money that this is going to be the answer that they come up with. And I was like, fine, but you don't know that. Yeah. So like, let's see. So I love that you bring in business people into these studies. What is like one of those outcomes that you've seen that has impacted bringing someone in
yeah.
like that to studies?
Yeah. So the first thing I'll say, just to speak to that too, like, I think it's so important that like to just have the mindset of like, you are not your user. Like your user is like whoever it is that's ultimately using this product, not you, right. the corporate or like worker of this, of X company, whatever it might be. And I also think it's important to also say like, what we do and what we say can also be very different, like even if we're aware of it or not.
Yeah.
And if we may think we might react a certain way or be able to do a certain thing, but then when it actually comes to doing it, we might have to hack it. Like doing directions from a like building furniture company sounds great and it's supposed to be all detailed, but like when it actually comes to doing it, like, are you following the directions piece by piece and like
Never.
Putting it together the way that yeah. So I think those are just two immediate things that like I think of when you say something like that. Let me think. So a specific example.
So real quick, what you just mentioned, I saw this like funny meme one time, and obviously because now I have a baby, that's all I think about is the mobile thing, and okay. it's, you know, the thing that hangs above their bed,
yeah.
that like
yeah, yeah, spins yeah. in a circle.
It was a picture of mobile designed from a like product designer perspective, mm-hmm. and it's this beautiful thing and it's so cute, it's got little animals that go around in the circle, and then it's like from the user's actual perspective and it's the baby laying in the crib looking up at just the butts of the
yeah.
animals.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. And that's the other thing, like things can be so, like I've worked with designers who are so talented and think so outside of the box and create these like beautiful, magical like pieces of art. But if someone can't use them, it doesn't matter. No. And so like it's so important, I think. And that's one of the big things the big values that I think user research brings to companies and to brands is like having the person go through and seeing it from their perspective. And so I think that's a great example, the mobile one. I thought you were going to say like, do I know what memes are? And I'm like, obviously. but yeah, no, it's so true. I, in the past, have done some work. I mean, I think it's pretty constant, the work that I do, that I have people join remotely right now. So in the past year, some of the work that I focus on is like physical product research, but then also digital research. And so in the last year, like with the changing times and all the challenges we're up against, all of our research has been remote for the most, like it has to be. Okay. Just for the safety of both participants and for the researchers. And even in these times, I have people join research sessions remotely. So they are like an invisible third party person just watching in on a web conference between you and me. And yeah. it's even them just like listening to this person talk, have them go through the website remotely, have them go through and like try on a wearable product or try and like lift up something that's actually much heavier to them. I think it's still, you get that feedback where it's like, wow, that was eye-opening. Like, I understand. I'm not going to be the resistance against like the decisions we make as a business. So I think in the past though, some of the places that I've seen the like most exciting impact is actually going into a store and like observing people purchasing a very complex product and then bringing in all of the things that they printed out that they're like, this is the proof I have from the website, the screenshots I took, all the things I read, like this is like what makes me feel confident in like being here today and starting this journey. But I need a human to kind of solidify and talk to and want to make this purchase and know that I'm making a good decision, whether that's a car, whether that's a phone, whether that's whatever it might be, any kind of expensive purchase like that. I think it's really interesting to like just be a fly on a wall. You can look like a everyday like customer yourself. You're not dressed in, you're not dressed in anything that screams like I'm a researcher or I work for the company or whatever. But just being able to observe and then potentially interview afterwards the people who just went through and like in that moment getting the feedback of like, well, I'm still not sure about like what my bill is going to look like after this. Or I'm still not really sure like when I walk out of here, I'm a little bit hesitant about this or like these type of pieces. And I think it's really interesting to do that with a group of people who think that they may only work in digital. And then to see people buying something in a store and all of the things that they're trying to think through and consider and know that they have to replicate this kind of purchasing experience in some way digitally too. Like trying to figure that out for like, how does that track against someone's mental model? For how they come into a store and all the things that they want to compare and the questions they want answered and the kind of security that a human confirming their decision provides. How do you do that in a digital way? So I've brought like designers in who have never really conducted research themselves, who haven't really been in the context of a store, like as someone is purchasing a certain thing. And then them go and try to figure out, like, how do we restructure the website to kind of meet the needs of someone going through this purchase experience but wants to do it digitally, but we still allow them to kind of feel that confident like they might if they were to go in store and do something. So that's really interesting.
That's actually so super cool because you're right. It's the same type of person that's going to go through that buying journey, that's going to go through that, like, customer experience one way or another. The ultimate goal is to get them to purchase something. So breaking the mold of, well, it's digital, so it's completely different from the brick and mortar, from in-store retail versus, or vice versa, where people are like, oh, well, you know, you're in person. And I used to work in retail. Mm-hmm. And I used to work in corporate designing for retail and specifically designing for merchandising. And one of the biggest things that I used to hear was, well, we don't have to worry about XYZ and displaying something the way that we do online because we have a rep in person to actually talk to it. Yeah. And I actually think that doing the same thing that you just did, but from the reverse perspective and like, yes, taking them through what it's like to purchase something in person with a rep. And then also taking that same person and purchasing that same thing on the web, for example, is completely different because, you know, you might still run into those things and maybe someone doesn't feel comfortable talking to the rep about their credit score, or they don't feel comfortable asking the rep some silly question because they think it's minuscule when in reality, everyone else is also tripping up at that exact same point. Mm-hmm. And on the web, it's a self-service environment. So you're able to like, you know, go through and answer that question yourself. But when you're with the rep, you might not. So I don't know. It's interesting. Like I personally never thought about that. And I love that that's like a thing that you're doing and that you're breaking the mold of, I think, because it's the same person. It's the same transaction, regardless of what medium and what channel we're doing it on. We need to kind of understand their behavior in both channels to help one hand help the other.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, you and I have worked on a project together years ago that was meant to be something titled at the time Omnichannel. But like, I still don't know that there's a lot of clarity around what exactly that means from a customer perspective and a company perspective and how you really approach that. And I don't think it's about like thinking if someone goes to this specific channel, it needs to be this to respond to that person. Like, channels are fluid at this point. Like, we are, as like a consumer myself, you're a consumer, like the ways that we engage with, and I know I just said like you're not your user, but like if you just think from your own perspective, like the way that you engage with brands right now, like pandemic aside, is very different than what you were doing like a couple years ago. Like, whether it's social driven, whether it's the in-person experience, whether it's the digital experience, the app experience, like it's so important for those things to be connected and not mm-hmm. just a duplication, and also not completely siloed from each other. Because then like as people kind of transition from one place to the next, it feels like a connected experience. It feels like a full, like whole experience to a customer. And I think it brings up like from a research perspective, figuring out like, why do people pick the channel that they pick, or why do people engage with a company in the ways that they engage? Why are they picking that as their choice? What are they looking to do there? And then figure out how you tie them together and not force people to all do it the same way, but to enable what it is that they need to do in the ways that they want to do it. So I think that's like an interesting, it's a huge research project, but it's also an important one, especially nowadays with people kind of being limited in the different ways that they can interact with a brand in person or a company in person, and needing to be able to still do what it is that they want to do in whatever way they feel comfortable. So allowing them and enabling them to do that is something that like user research can help with.
Yeah, exactly. I like what you said. I mean, yes, you're not your user, but you are a user.
Yeah.
And I also think people sometimes forget that. And it's easy to kind of take this third party like approach of like, I am this person up here that's thinking through this ideal state thing.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't remember that you're also someone who purchases things regardless of whether you're purchasing the specific thing or not. So it's nice to be able to like remind yourself that every once in a while.
It's also one of those things like thinking about like service and support. Like if you have a really terrible experience with the company and you have to call in and you're on hold, you've tried multiple different ways of getting through, you just don't know how to solve your problem, you are waiting and chatting and doing all these things all at once, like you then probably go tell a lot of people about how terrible that experience was. Like that's something that like sticks with you. You're in meetings and you're like, let's definitely never be like that, we need to make sure. But it's like, until that happens, you don't know, like you may have painful experiences in the past that you can reference, but like when it is something that you are going through and you are really like charged up about it and passionate about it, whether it be really bad, like the example I just gave, or something where it's someone went out of their way that works for the company and I just had such a great experience, I just felt so cared for, like all these pieces, like it is something that you then also may like talk about in a different way, but it takes like being in those moments to really have something passionate about. But our users and the people that you're designing and building products for, like there are people going through that every day. And until you get to that point where you've had that similar experience, you may not necessarily understand how painful it can be or how great it can be. So that's where like research can help kind of like show those things to you without you necessarily needing to like go through the real pain of being on hold and then being connected to someone else who you really need to re-explain your story to, who then like transfers you to someone else, and then you get hung up on and you have to call back and then you have a wait time, and then it's just like this endless soup of terribleness in your eyes. But so
I think it's humanizes the experience.
Absolutely.
Too. Like bringing someone in and having them have an actual person there in front of you telling them, hey, this works or this doesn't work, is it brings the human component in. You're not just talking about a number on a piece of paper, or a number on a screen. I think I just saw it this morning on my LinkedIn feed. The positive quote unquote example that you just said was something similar, is Chewy. I don't know if you've seen the way that they handle when someone notifies them of their pet passing away. They send them flowers.
Yeah.
Which is crazy for a company that relies on them having pets to be, you know, to make money, but that's a positive thing that someone probably in the company went through, or they realized, you know, they just took the human aspect and put it back into their customer experience.
Yeah. And that's looking at something like customer journeys and like for someone as a Chewy customer, like I don't have a pet right now, and I'm not someone who has like used them specifically, but what I can imagine is they took a long look at like their customers. What are the important like phases that they go through as a Chewy customer? And like, what are the key moments that they could surprise and delight their users? What are the ways that they want to support people so that like they leave like that good impression with them? What are the ways that they could care for their customers in these key moments of like transitions and stuff like that? And so I'm sure that was a actually design and research exercise to figure out like what are the hardest, like most painful moments within their like journey, and what are the ways that we can kind of remind them that we're there for them. And how might we do that? And then maybe the idea came through with that, but I could hypothesize that may have been the thing. It could have also just been an executive decision somewhere where you're like, this would be really nice. But that's a good example of like how something like a journey or like journey mapping could expose like something like that for how might we approach a difficult time like that and remind them that we're there for them.
Do you use journey mapping a lot in your research?
Here and there. It's something that I don't only work on, but it is important for like between service design and journey mapping. That is one of the different components that I've worked on.
I personally like diving into a journey that's not well baked, or breaking apart a journey and seeing if this is the right user experience or not.
Mm-hmm.
I think the two of us had like a good kind of deep dive into creating a new user journey when we were working on the one project together, where we had to basically create this product from scratch. That was kind of where my love for user journeys started. But I just think it's cool to think through, like you have a person and that person is the same person as they go through and interact with you. And their life may be different. Their needs from you may be different, but they're still the same person. Mm-hmm. So thinking through a customer, not just of who they are in that one moment that's a pain point, but thinking through who they are before and after that pain point too, I think is super important.
Yeah. I think it also helps connect things from like like going from start to finish and like tying things together in that way that could help along the way and help prepare them for those moments that we can anticipate as a company, but you may not anticipate as a customer. It also, I think, just helps illustrate some of those pieces.
Yeah. So how important is company buy-in into research?
Yeah.
Because I feel like you are in a position that is lucky enough, you know, it was kind of like a top-down approach. They came and they said, this is something that we feel is very necessary. We need to know and understand our customers. We need to do research on them.
Mm-hmm.
But other companies are probably not going to have that same fortune.
So I don't have the latest statistic on this, but there is an incredible difference in how expensive it is to make something and launch it to your customers and have it be totally unusable and not at all address their needs than it is to do a few rounds of user research prior to developing and launching things. Like the difference in how expensive it can be is incredible. You can talk to 5 people like early on in discussions and get feedback on something and learn so much that helps drive the direction of your product. It brings in the perspective of the people that are actually using your product and can be like so key to being able to just meet their needs, understand what those are and design against them, and then build and develop things that they can actually use. So I think if you don't have a huge budget for it, you can do things like go out in the wild and just observe people. Like, it's, I mean, right now, again, we're limited, but like, go places. You can do cheap research, or you can do recruit exact people, build like high fidelity prototypes, like do all of this stuff. But like, there are ways to balance. If you're constrained by budget, there's still ways for you to be able to learn from the people that use your products, or go out and learn like the people who you think might be your users. Start with friends and family and ask, have you ever used this stuff? Build questionnaires that give you kind of a consistent baseline. Like, you can do things where you at least have somewhere to start from that could be less expensive. And even like for students, getting just familiarizing yourself with the process of research and what it means to actually like learn from people who are not you, and observe and kind of ask questions and see how they respond is so helpful for just being able to kind of keep that mindset as you then like go off and get jobs and do other, maybe you're not a researcher yourself, but then you can understand the value of research. But I think for companies, like, it is just one of those things where the cost to your bottom line is so much more than like what you would save if you say like, we're not doing research in the beginning. And you can save so much more by including just a few iterations of research along the way to really narrow in and hone in on the people who are your end users and what it is that they need to be able to use your product.
Yeah. And even just like you mentioned, for students, for small businesses too, you know, especially absolutely. For them, they don't have a big budget, but they can still, just like you said, reach out to friends and family, do small market research studies independently and say like, you know, poll your ideal target on social media or something like that, and get a sense from the people that you're going to be selling to if what you're selling is good, or if you should market it a different way, or if you should tweak one thing a little bit differently. And that might help, especially for small businesses, drive a huge uptick in sales, for example.
Absolutely. And it's like, small businesses is one of those places that I think right now, like, so much innovation is happening with how they have to adapt to things on the fly.
Yeah.
All of the restrictions in statewide, like government-wide, nationwide, like all of these things, like small businesses are the ones right now who I think are among some of the most innovative brands and companies and people. Yeah. And the test and learn approach right now is happening with these companies trying to figure out like, what still allows my users or my customers to be able to like engage with me and do what they need to do. And like the codes on menus and the like ways that they're allowing people to still like eat at restaurants and those type of things. Small businesses, you have this kind of like loyal following that you can tap into. And I would feel pretty confident in saying like, If there are people that are your loyal customers and you approach them with like, we want to improve our like processes, we want to improve our business, we want to do this, like that's a brand that they believe in. That's a brand that they support. Like, they are putting their own money towards. People want to help the brands that they like support already. And so if you're asking their opinion and like, hey, these are the things that we're considering doing, like, we're a bakery, want to introduce a few scone flavors, like whatever it might be. Yeah. There's ways to just really get quick feedback and do things very low budget with the people who are your loyal customers that'll tell you how it is and not want you to do something that they're not actually going to use.
That exact thing actually happened to me the other day, where like there's a coffee shop right around the corner that Brian and I get food and coffee from almost daily. And they know us by name, obviously, since we go there a lot, and they have a very, very loyal following. But yeah, they were like, hey, listen, we're experimenting. Can we give you guys like two or three extra of these like croissant type things? Tell me what you think. Like, do you like it? Do you not like it? Is it something that we should sell?
Yep.
It was so quick and easy. I felt good about it because they were like, oh, that's nice. They're asking me for feedback and they're giving me a free thing. Cool. And they're asking for my feedback. And I was open and honest with them. And I said, hey, yeah, it was delicious. To be honest, it was a little sweet for me. Don't think I would buy it on a regular basis. Maybe I'd buy it for special occasions. And they're like, yeah, we've gotten that feedback from a couple of the people. So maybe we'll break it out for like, you know, a holiday special or something like that and not have it as a part of their regular menu. But okay. That is doing something quick and easy and simple like that is so much bigger and so much easier than, say, spending valuable time from your baker baking like 100 of these things and then having that be wasted inventory.
Yeah, I think for the point that you just made too, to build on that, like your experience as a customer was actually improved by the fact that you feel like your voice was heard and that you could make a difference within the company that you're supporting and you're Absolutely. Driving the future direction of them, which is a really good feeling from a user perspective or from a customer perspective. But then the brand also has this education of like, all right, well, we're not going to invest so much on this thing. We'll try and approach it this way. And it's kind of that win-win where you feel like you've been heard and they know more about your perspective as a customer. But I've also seen that at large scale corporations, like I've done research with users and they're like, wow, the fact that they care enough that they're not just trying to like make money off of me, but they actually want to understand me and what I need. That goes a long way, even though if we're just doing a few interviews, like it's a smaller bucket of people that are then kind of impacting that. But like they are representative of the voice of the customers. And
yeah,
there's still the same reaction with after the sessions, like, wow, that's great that they care enough to ask me. And then the company also gets the information of, well, let's not pursue this, let's pursue that, similar to that bakery. So I think even though they're very different scales of how many customers they have and what their reach might look like, it's exactly the same type of thing I've seen, whether that's a small mom and pop shop or whether it's a like large scale national corporation.
And yeah, your customer feels seen and heard. Mm-hmm. And that's like, that I think is so valuable because then, you know, they'll go and they'll tell their friend, hey, XYZ company, regardless of if it's the small company or the large corporation, mm-hmm. is listening to their customers. And you don't get that negative feedback of, or that negative frustration before you put something out. Do you think that it's better to have research done before a product is put out there or after it's put out there to improve upon it?
So the researcher in me will say that, and honestly, to my core, I believe whatever phase of the product you're in or the project you're in, if you haven't done research already, it's important. I think if you're able to, I know everybody has challenges, whether it's budget restrictions, whether it's time restrictions, whatever it might be. I think in an ideal perfect world, which nobody lives in an ideal perfect world, you're able to start a project with research and you're able to figure out what are the needs, how do we address them, how might we create things that then solve those pain points, those type of things. But like, I know that's not realistic for everyone. And I know that that's not always, not everybody has the ability to do it the perfect way. So I would just say whatever process you're in, whether you are in pre-launch, pre-development, do it then, and it will probably be cheaper for you in the long term. Do it afterwards. If people are already using it, bring it to a couple different people. And if it's already a product that's out there, have them use it too. Like, what's your objective for running this research? Is it to figure out if people can use it? Is it to figure out if this is helpful? Is it to figure out, like, does this make sense with how they live their lives? And does it fit seamlessly into, like, the things they already do and the way that you want to engage with them? So it's not really a tough question. It's more so just, I know people are up against a lot of tough challenges, especially in the world that we're living in right now. And I think if you have the ability to do research, whatever part of the process you're in, it still will help.
I love that. Thank you. Well, we are going to take, I have one more important question for you. And then I'm going to sidetrack and we're going to do like a little word association game, word association slash rapid fire question game, if that makes sense.
Cool.
So before I ask and wrap that up and we can get, dive into the game, is there anything else UX related and research related that you kind of want to talk about and want to get, like, I don't know, anyone to listen to know?
I would say that the, for whoever the audience for this is, whether you're a student, whether you are like in a career that you have very little connection to research, or whether you're someone who works closely with a research team or a researcher yourself, research can feel intimidating. UX research, market research, like there's a lot of buzzwords that are used. It can be quite tricky at times to understand certain things, but in general, like researchers are just naturally curious people that really want to bring the perspective of like the users, the customers, to whoever it is that's going to be able to use them, and never be afraid to ask them questions, never be afraid to like dig in deeper. They get really excited. Like I'll speak for myself and a lot of other researchers that I've worked with, like some of my favorite conversations to have are ones like these where we get to just talk about research. It's something that's exciting. Being able to kind of bring in different like anecdotes and stories. Like we're both these people who want to be advocates for their users and tell the stories of like what they're dealing with and what their troubles are and their pain, like their moments of pain are. But we're just naturally curious people. So we want to have those conversations. And so I would just say whatever role you're in, if you're curious too, and you want to know more, don't be afraid to like reach out to the people in your company, to the other people that are either working in roles like on LinkedIn that you see and you might want to reach out to, whatever that might be, because most of the time I'll say they'll respond back and they'll be just as excited to talk about it.
Awesome. Well, with that, before we dive into the games, where can people find you if they want to reach out to you and they want to ask more questions from you?
So I think LinkedIn's probably the easiest way to do it. So my name's Melissa Sanchez, and you can look me up there. I'm a UX researcher at Verizon, and I think that's the best way to probably reach me.
Awesome. All right, game time. Yeah, this is kind of rapid fire. So it's half this or that, half word association, half like quick answers.
Okay, so I can't pause and take a look at my phone for inspiration.
No, you can't. You can take like a little minute or two to think about it, but not a minute or two.
It's That's okay. I got it.
Couple seconds.
Bring it on.
All right. What's the most useful thing you own?
Probably my, I mean, this might be silly, but maybe just my running shoes.
Okay, that's awesome.
Like, it's one of those things that, like, I'm comfortable. Like, I this past year, I've learned not to take fresh air in my lungs for granted. And it's been so important to get, like, walks and runs outside and exercise. And just the ability to, like, lace up my shoes and get outside. Like fresh air, I don't think is something I'll ever take for granted again.
Nice. I like that. Online shopping or shopping in a store?
Depends on what it is. I love to browse. I love to browse, but I'm constantly online shopping. My carts are constantly full of things.
I think I agree with you in that, like, from a, like, when you go browsing for something, you're maybe not like intentionally shopping, you're just going for the experience. You go in a store, but
if I know what I need, online shopping is great. If I want to, like retail therapy is a real thing for me.
Yes.
If I need to like relax, shopping by myself in a store for endless amounts of time with nowhere to be and nothing to do, and just like all the beautiful fabrics and whatnot to get, like touch.
See, that's,
yeah, I could spend my entire day in a mall if needed.
That's where we differ, because that the thought of doing that gives me so much anxiety.
Nope. I need to be like basically by myself to do it. Like it's not calming if I'm with pretty much anyone except for maybe one or two people who are on the same page with me, but cannot do it. Like it has to be basically by myself and I am not looking for anything. I'm just open to whatever I may find.
That's good. So you're one of those people where Target will tell you what you need.
Target will tell me way too many things that I need. Exactly.
Okay. All right. A quick one. Coke or Pepsi?
Neither.
Okay. Fair. How about, this is a stem from this question and I don't know why this just jumped into my brain, but do you have a particular brand of water that you lean to?
That I'm into?
That you lean towards or do you just not care?
Sparkling water or regular water?
Regular water.
I've actually been trying to be better about using water filters and not using like brand water bottles. I think it's Life Water. I mean, I'm trying. I think Life Water is good. It has the packaging that is kind of more recyclable. But I also love sparkling water. So that's why I was like excited about that question. Sparkling.
All right. Well, let's talk sparkling water then.
Mm-hmm. I love my newest find. I rotate. It just depends on same thing with my music taste. My flavor of water kind of rotates. I think it's AHA was the brand that I discovered recently that has a watermelon lime flavor that is delicious.
Ooh, I like that. Mm-hmm. That sounds really good. I'm really picky with that. And I at first thought that I would like all these different brands and flavors, but I'm very lame. And if I'm going to have flavor in my water or in my sparkling or anything really, it's just going to be lime.
Yeah.
Very boring. All right. A couple more quick ones because I know you got to get out of here. Would you rather have the ability to do fast typing / texting or fast reading?
I can't really, this is one of those things I'm struggling with right now. I would probably do fast typing or texting. And I know you're probably not looking for my reasoning for each of these questions, but I guess.
No, I do. I do want your reasoning.
So I get a bit dizzy with reading like a lot of information on like my phone or what it might be. I need to print things out and like digest them that way. And I'm much slower when it comes to reading things like that. Otherwise I'll get dizzy.
That makes sense. See, that's interesting the way that you took that. We like to kind of dive into the why behind everything. So this is
absolutely
because that's the naturally curious aspect of who we are. Immediately when I first read that question, my response was I would like to read faster because in my brain I went to a physical book and it takes me so much longer to physically read books because I like to sit there and digest and sometimes I space out. So the ability to read something faster, like a book, physically not even on a screen, would help me finish reading books.
Yeah.
What is an emerging technology that you're super excited about?
That's a weird question. So this might not be the innovation behind it isn't something specific, but I think things becoming a lot less touchless is something that I'm excited about. I know the Amazon Go store, I think if I'm saying that correctly, like being able to walk in and walk out without having to touch a register, do something like that, have a more seamless experience in that way. I think I'm excited about being able to grab and go and do things like on your own time without needing to necessarily touch or pay or do those type of things.
I like that. And it's very poignant of this time period.
Yeah, for a lot of reasons.
Yes. What's the craziest, most outrageous thing or goal that you want to achieve in your life?
The craziest, most outrageous. So can you define what you mean by craziest?
A goal that you might not think is attainable right now.
Okay.
In your life, whether it's a professional or personal or whatever.
And
we're putting good vibes out into the universe for this to happen.
Yeah. So, I mean, this might be cheesy, but like, I don't think anything's off limits right now. I think I would love to do international research. That's something that is a goal, but I don't think that's impossible. I Maybe the stretch thing would be do international research while speaking a different language. So,
ooh, that's fun.
Mm-hmm.
I can get you in touch with people in Portugal.
Yeah, hook it up. You might just have to personally be my tutor.
That's fine. I'm okay with that. Okay. If you had to relive one day of your life forever, I think Groundhog's Day, what day would you choose?
It's a day that has previously happened that I would be reliving.
Yeah, I think that's how I took it. I don't know. I guess if you wanted to say like Christmas every day, then you could say that too.
I mean, the thing that comes first to mind is we were going through over the holidays some old pictures with my family. And there was a picture of my brother and I with my two grandparents at a golf course down the shore in New Jersey. And I was rocking like the coolest outfit, obviously overalls, like killing it with my sneakers and my outfit and like whatever it was, had my cool hip hop going in my pose, but like was just so happy in that picture. And like just being able to go back to being, I think, a kid and not have worries of things and being able to hang out with grandparents during the day and having it be warm and sunny, like eating ice cream or Italian ice. Yeah, going to the beach and just like playing and making sandcastles. Like if I had to pick a day based on just a photo, I would go back to that one.
I love that. Picking a day based on a photo. That's so fun. Ugh, I want to go to the beach. I want to hang out with my grandparents. I want to do all the above. Actually, I'm really lucky. I was able to hang out with my grandma the other day for her birthday. She turned 93.
Wow.
So excited. Yeah. So we got to celebrate with her. Yeah. Just a couple of us at my dad's house, but it was really nice.
Nice.
Okay. Last question that I'm going to ask you is app related, and it's a two-part question.
Cool.
One is, what's an app that you think is awesome, out of this world, best app experience you've ever had? And then on the contrary, what's an app that you think exists, is out there, people know about it, but you think is useless or sucks from a user experience perspective? Because I know we geek out about this kind of stuff all the time. And something that I found that was actually super interesting was at your birthday when we went to Botello in Jersey City.
Yep. Shout out Botello, sponsor this podcast.
I know, right? Hey, Botello.
Hook some girls up with some absinthe wine.
Yes, please. That'd be amazing. They had an app on this tablet experience to pick your wine I was obsessed with. And I wanted to take that home and just kind of dive into it and research it and understand what drove them to create this. It was an in-house thing that they did, and it was so cool. Mm-hmm. And I'm gonna explain it for the people listening, but also if you want to jump in at any point and like highlight things that because you actually dove in way more than I did. But there were three things that I thought were really interesting, and you could find your wine a number of ways. You could pick your wine based off of like just straight up looking for it, and you know, menu style, the way that the traditional wine is picked at a restaurant. Mm-hmm. You could pick it based off of like flavor sets, I think. So, which is another way that a lot of companies are choosing wine nowadays. You could pick it based off of region. So they actually had a map where you could zoom in and pick like, I like wines from Argentina. Let me pick it from this valley in Argentina or this region. Or you can pick a wine from France or wine from Spain or whatever. And if you got really into like this specific area of Burgundy, France would have this specific wine or this specific grape, which that was really cool. Or they had this like, I don't know, it looked kind of like a Gantt chart of wine, right? And it said like, if you like this flavor profile, they'll give you like in the right upper right hand corner, it was price and flavor or something like that.
Like drier, more full bodied.
Yeah, exactly. And I just found it interesting watching you use that app Because you know what kind of wines you like. So you were like, I'm going to make this up, but you're like, I want a drier, sweeter wine, for example, but you ended up continuously coming up with the wine that you know that you like, which is on my menu, which I thought was hysterical. And you're like, well, I guess I know my wine. I know my flavor palette.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I really liked and appreciated that they went through all the effort to create that. And it made kind of the idea, it felt sommelier-like. It felt interactive. It felt still safe. And it felt like you were kind of learning and exploring something in a way that made sense to a non-advanced wine. While I drink a decent amount, I'm not someone with a breadth of knowledge for like the different things that make up a wine and how to decide from one to the next. So yeah, I agree. I think to answer your question about apps that I like, so I haven't used it in a long time, but I always thought Hopper was something that was really interesting. I liked how it naturally kind of worked with thinking about a trip, being on the lookout for flights, wanting to kind of naturally wait until you might be getting a deal, bundling things and kind of looking together. I think Airbnb does a good job with that too. I think Starbucks does a good job with their app and like being able to add payment methods and order ahead and kind of the way that we think about purchasing coffee right now and then in the in-store experience, like that all being connected. And it feels just very on brand for them. Those are some immediate ones that come to mind. I don't want to hate on anyone's like app experience. There's ones that I am not as familiar with. And so like, for example, like TikTok, I've used a handful of times. I am not a TikToker, but I have a lot of difficulty just because I am a newer user, like understanding what to do or how to use it. And that just, I think, is a bit of a learning curve for me, but it's less of an intuitive interface than I probably would have expected, or I would have thought it might be a bit more similar to some other social platforms. So I would say maybe like things like that, but the things that make a good app experience, I think, are like a low learning curve. They are things that are intuitive in terms of menu and navigation and findability of things. The look and feel is great if it feels really good, but things like I have donated blood through the Red Cross, and they have an application that allows you to kind of do the paperwork beforehand, and then they have this great experience after the blood donation where they actually tell you about your journey for like where your blood's getting connected to, like what hospital or location it's going to. Like there's a lot of those little pieces where they tell you about like your stats and your blood pressure and like your type of blood and those type of things within the app. And it just is not something I expected. It's very like interesting to me. And it also helps me think that I'm actually making a difference by that, and then encourages kind of that future behavior. So while not perfect, there are pieces to it that I think have a lot of greatness.
That's fun. I've never would have expected that.
Yeah.
It's really cool. All right. Well, this is a lot of fun.
This is a lot of fun. I think in terms of next steps, I should flip the
script. You're such a corporate person.
I should flip the script on you and do some of these questions from a research perspective. I will ask you about and we can do like a real research kind of session on the fly and ask some of these rapid questions, because I always love to hear your thoughts and your perspectives on things. Anytime I hear good advice or I see good brands doing good things, like I always want to share it with you. I'd love to hear more about your perspective and what you've learned from all of these interviews and do something like that. How's that sound?
Oh my God. I would love that. Love that.
Yeah. All right.
I also think it'd be a lot of fun, because my sister was actually talking to me about this too. And she's like, you have to get out from behind the microphone, but stay behind the microphone.
Yeah.
and do like a flip the script. kind of thing. So I love that.
Yeah.
I think you'd be the right person to do that too.
Well, I'm happy to help either do it or create the mod guide for it or whatever that might be. I also, so I know you've done a couple of these. Have you asked people for like what their advice is to your audience? Like, or what's like a piece of advice that they would give someone either early in their career or something good that they heard in terms of like a standout piece of advice at this point? So I only ask because that's one of those things where I feel like it doesn't have to be massive. It could just be recent. Like it could just be something that you heard that kind of makes you think or change something. And part of this is top of mind for me because I was reading something the other day about just ways to reframe how you talk in business or how you respond that is maybe first nature to a woman or whatever it might be, to like instantly start apologizing or doing things like that, and ways that you can kind of flip that to feel less like you are coming across in a way that's like, I'm so sorry, it's my fault, I take blame, all that kind of stuff. And I just think it's always interesting to hear like a small piece of advice. It doesn't have to be like massive disruptive career advice, but just things like that. And one of the best pieces of advice that I've heard recently is to not start an email, even if it's taken some time for you to respond because you're busy or like it slipped through the inbox, to not respond with "so sorry, let me jump in and kind of help right now." But instead something from the place of, I appreciate your patience. And it's less of a thing where you come across in that way where you're overly apologetic. You've been putting this off personally, but it just comes from a place that I think is a little bit more confident. And I've been trying to kind of implement things like that into like, as I grow my career, coming across in a way that's like professional, but still clearly shows like I'm paying attention. I'm getting to it.
Yeah, exactly.
So one of those things where like, if you're doing a topic or a discussion, you could do a panel of like advice for like stuff like that. But just want something that I wanted to share with you because I had heard it the other day that. And I thought that was like a really interesting small change that you could make that like made a big difference in just like how I think about responding to emails.
I personally need to think about that because I'm the first person. I think it's the people pleaser in me.
Yeah.
Always apologizes, even if it's not my fault.
Yep.
Like it's the first thing that I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. Like just now before Maya was scratching at the door outside and I texted Brian, hey, sorry, can you let Maya in? Why did I apologize? I wasn't the one that, she's not fully my responsibility. Like, yes, she's our dog. Like, I don't need to apologize for her making noise, like, but I did. So that's definitely something that I need to personally take. Similarly, a piece of advice that I heard from someone one time, and I think it's a female thing, kind of like what you said before, was using the word just. I just want to take a second. I just want to put my two cents in. I just want to say thank you. I just want to say whatever. Like the amount of times that you're, that you say just is similar to the way that people apologize for things instead of just saying it, you know, like, I just want to take a quick second and say thank you. You could just say, hey, thank you. A, it adds words to your emails or to your correspondence or time that you're saying that you're taking up from someone.
Yep.
But it's almost that like asking for permission to speak or asking for forgiveness that you're taking up someone's time, things like that. So,
yeah. And again, I bring it up not because maybe it makes sense for this podcast recording, whatever, but I think part of what the topic of this podcast reminds me of is like these type of conversations that we would have like after work, like happy hour wise. And we would be talking about things like bigger issues. Like, yeah, you want to vent about maybe certain frustrations you might have within your job or like the current project that you're dealing with, or talk about like a really exciting moment that happened in a meeting. But I also think you and I definitely have gone to a place always where we're having conversations that are bigger than just the small challenge I may be dealing with that feels big in the moment, but also these things like, how do I show up and represent myself in a way that is confident, and like, how do I continue to grow my career in ways that like I want to, and what are the small ways I do that that then add up to big ways? Who are the people that I reach out and talk to that I don't know, but yeah, I want to exactly. learn more about, those type of things. So
no, I agree. And like an example of that is, what are like the thoughts and fears and motivations behind your career, and what do you want to get out of life in general? Yeah. Like all of these like thought-provoking conversations that actually you are one of the people that I was thinking of behind wanting to start this whole podcast. Like, what is it that I want people to get out of this?
Yeah.
And again, what is the like ideal user or listener or person that I want to interview? And it was, I want someone to feel like they are sitting at the table with us, having another glass of wine with us, and specifically with you and I, because of conversations like this, which is what I love.
Yeah,
and you and I continuously have these types of conversations. We sit at the bar for hours after happy hour is over, because we just get too deep and too involved in conversations with each other. So, well, I appreciate you being here with me, taking the time to talk to me about this. And I look forward to seeing you soon and seeing you in person so we can have an actual glass of wine together.
Anytime.
Cheers. Talk to you later. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Drinks After Work podcast. Don't forget to rate, review, and follow us on social media. Thanks, and let's cheers again next week.